The parable of the long spoons goes like this. There was once a rabbi who was an itinerant preacher. His name was Rabbi Chaim of Rosh Hashek. He traveled from town to town telling religious sermons. And this is the story that he told. He said, "I travel to the firmaments, and I first went to hell, and this is what I saw there. I saw table after table set with the most sumptuous food you could imagine. And yet, when I saw all of the people sitting around the tables, they were pale and emaciated and starving. I couldn't figure out what was going on, and so I looked more closely, and this is what I saw. I saw that they each had wooden slats that were splints on their arms, and they were each holding long spoons. And so though the food was right in front of them, they had no way of getting it from the spoon to their mouths because their elbows would not bend. And then I traveled to heaven, and I was surprised to see the same situation. Table after table set with sumptuous food, only the people looked different here. They were smiling. They were talking with one another, and they looked satisfied and sated. What was curious was that they too had their arms in wooden splints, and their elbows would not bend, and they too were holding long spoons. Only there was a difference when I looked more closely. What was happening was that one person would scoop up the food in front of them and then lean across the table to feed the person sitting across. And then that person would eat, and then that person would fill their spoon with the food and lean across and feed the person in return. Oh, so that is the difference between heaven and hell. It's in how people treat one another. And so I had the bright idea that I would run back to hell and give them the secret. And so I did. I went back to hell and I whispered into the ear of one of the people who was starving, and I said, "All you have to do is put the food on your spoon and then lean across and feed the person sitting across from you." And the man snarled at me and said, "It'll be over my dead body that I feed that detestable person sitting across from me." And so he didn't. And so they all sat around and starved. So graduates, those of you who are moving on in different ways, you now have all you need to know for life. That is it. Everything you learned summed up in one thing. The difference between heaven and hell on earth is in how you treat one another. It sounds so simple, and it's so easy to say that we learn it at very young ages. We learn what we call the golden rule. We can say it when we're like 3 or 4 years old. And it is one of the most difficult things to do. How many of you who are over 80 years old, so you're going to give yourselves away, how many of you who are over 80 years old and have had a long time to practice this, how many of you have perfected it? Raise your hands. I thought I might see one hand. So, it is very difficult to do in life as simple as it sounds. It is so profound and has such a profound impact on the ordering of community life that every one of the world's major religions has a variation of it. It makes a difference in community living, a transformative difference. So because it's so difficult, I thought it might be helpful if we break it down a little bit. So I've come up with three situations in which we can begin to think seriously about how we can practice doing unto others as we would have them do to us. Now I've given them each creative names, each of these situations, so that you can remember them. So the first situation is what I'm going to call telephone tag team. Now you all remember how much fun it is when you're younger, when you first learn how to play the game telephone. So when you have a group of people and you're sitting in a circle, and one person in the circle thinks of something to say and they whisper it to the person next to them. Then that person whispers it to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And by the time you get around the circle, the last person is supposed to say out loud what they think the first person actually said. And pretty soon everybody is rolling on the floor laughing because the end person says something so vastly different than the first person. Now, when we play it in a game like that, it is great fun and does no harm. But as we all know, because we have all been somewhere in that telephone circle at some time, in real life, it can be very hurtful and very destructive. It's what happens when we feel wronged or hurt or angered or frustrated in some way. Our natural response often is to tell someone, usually someone who is our good friend or someone we know well, because it's upsetting to us. What we don't often intend, but often what happens, is then that person, because they're kind of sticking up for you, they'll tell somebody else. And you know how it goes. Pretty soon, 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 20 people have heard it. And each time it gets told, it's told a little differently. And if you've ever been the person at the beginning of that circle, you know how mortifying it is when by the 10th person, the story has changed so much that it's not even your story anymore, but still has your name attached to it. And so if we're going to apply the golden rule, what we would do then is think carefully before we turn to the person next to us in our circle. We would think carefully about that, knowing that there is the potential that it'll set off the telephone tag team. We ask ourselves in that moment, if this were me, if the conversation was going to be about me, would I want someone to do the same thing? If not, what would I rather they do? And that gets us into the second situation. The second one I've titled, it's a little extreme, but bear with me. The second one I've titled, Big Shot Bully But Afraid to Talk. It's a little self-explanatory. But the idea behind this one is that, like where we ended up with the first situation, we can stop so many wildfires before they ever get started if we would stop and be willing to address the person that has upset us in some way. I don't know what it is other than that somewhere in our past, we were all about survival of the fittest. I don't know what it is that makes us afraid to talk to the person who we think has wronged us in some way. But we are afraid to do that most of the time. And so what we do instead is we say all of that to somebody else. And so we have to stop and ask ourselves, what would I want if it were me that the person was upset with? Would I rather have someone come to me, or would I rather have them tell someone else? We know in our community life that this happens. There is not a church or a faith community that exists in the world that this doesn't happen in. We have seen some of the effects in this very community. Since I have been here, I have been involved in a couple of situations where something is on to the fourth or the fifth or the sixth person, and I hear about it. And here's the thing. Here's the rule beneath the rule with this one. If we want to do to others as we would have them do to us, then the number one thing for us is at that point to stop and ask ourselves, do I personally know this to be true? And if not, am I going to share it with someone else? That stops the spreading of it. If I'm the person, the original person who feels wrong, then I have to ask myself, again, ask myself the question, if someone were upset with me, what would I want them to do? I would want them to come to me. Believe it or not, as I've dealt with situation after situation related to this, most of the time, the person who has wronged you in some way would feel terrible to know that you've been hurt or upset or angered in the way that you have been. They don't even realize it. And if they realized it, they would want to make amends with you. So when we turn to someone else with that upsetness, we eliminate that opportunity. And then we create trouble beyond imagining. Relationships are lost, jobs are lost, families are torn in half. So again, how would we want people to do to us if we had been the ones who had hurt them or angered them or frustrated them? Now, the third one is what I have called, let me hide behind the computer shield. So I can tell by your laughter that you know this one too. While the internet and access to email has been really tremendous in helping move things forward in our world, it has also created a whole other avenue for destruction. You know what I'm talking about. I want to tell you a little story from when I was the pastor at Northminster Presbyterian Church in El Cerrito. I was trying to get as many people as possible involved in the leadership of that little congregation. And so at one point, I asked a man who had been absent for a while and had shown back up at church one Sunday, I asked him if he wanted to be a part of a small group that was looking at future possibilities for the congregation. He said yes, he'd love to, and he became a part of the small group. Some people warned me after that I had made a mistake in asking him because he was known to have created some real destruction in the congregation. I smiled and said, yeah, but people change. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So one Saturday morning, very early, I was awakened by a phone call from one of the elders. And the elder said, "I want you to know that this man has sent an email to everyone in the congregation saying that you do not have the congregation's best interest at heart and they need to get rid of you immediately." Had it been sent from anyone other than that individual, it would have done irreparable damage between me and that congregation at a very vulnerable time. The amount of destruction we can cause with one click is terrifying. And so, again, we think about this golden rule: what would we want someone to do with and for us? Now, you all, I know, well, I think I'm not the only one who does this. You receive an email that upsets you, and you just start typing away back so hard that your fingers practically get cramped because you're hitting the keys so hard. And if there was a visual for it, you know that when you click that send button, it would go with smoke attached to it. At least that's how you mean for it to go. That is the exact moment that you have to stop and say to yourself, what would I want someone to do if it were me? And here's the rule I have come up with over time. Never am I to send that immediately. So just as I'm hovering above the button, I try to tell myself to stop and give it some time. I have tried to make it a 24-hour period. If I give myself 24 hours and then go back to it, reread both things, and still feel okay about sending it, then at that point I can consider sending it. 99.9% of the time, it goes into the trash, which is where it belongs. Again, that is the point at which, if you feel the need to fire off something, then you can recognize in yourself that you need to talk with that person. Instead of hiding behind the computer, pick up the phone, tell the person you're upset and you'd like to talk with them about it. Unfortunately, we multiply the damage we do when we copy others on the email. We've all done it. We are justified in our upsetness, and we know that the group that we're copying will also be upset with and for us. And again, relationships are lost, jobs are lost. Think about, in the case of teenagers, what's happened with computers. We hear stories of teenagers who are committing suicide because of what someone has posted on Facebook or MySpace or YouTube. In a keystroke, we can do more damage than most of the time we mean to do. And so we have to learn to stop ourselves. Go ahead and compose it. Print it even if you want to, and then shred it. And then get yourself in a place where you can go to that person and talk to them. The reason every major religion has a variation of this is because it is necessary for the ordering of community life. And so for those of you who are graduating and moving on, who are going to be part of new communities wherever you are, my hope is that if you have learned nothing else from the Montclair Church community, you have at least learned this. Do to others as you would have them do to you, treat others as you would have them treat you. It is a part of our faith language that will give you something in common with people of every other faith tradition. And it is the part of our faith language that more than anything else we want you to take with you. Let us all treat others as we would like to be treated. Amen.